My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. This time it was Rahul's turn to pick, and he picked the 90s action classic Blade. So Rahul, what motivated you to select this film?
Well, there's a whole backstory to this song that I really like now. Initially, I didn't like it. Ronald was like, bro, this is the greatest song ever or something. I don't know. I beat him up. But it was the Blade theme song. And for some reason, some conversation we were having veered into Blade theme song territory or riffs on it. So I was like, why have we not watched Blade yet? I've never seen Blade. And this podcast is just an excuse for me to watch movies I didn't see as a child. So yeah, Blade was an obvious choice. I don't know how we missed it.
You've never seen Blade?
Nope. Although, I remember some scenes from it. Like, I remember the club scene, the scene where the sword blows off that dude's hands. I remember scenes of it, but I don't remember the whole movie. I don't know how that happened.
So you must have watched it.
I don't remember anything but those two scenes.
The club scene is iconic enough that I feel like you might have had it in your head without seeing it. The "his sword kills anyone but him" thing, though, is so specific. I feel you must have seen at least part of this movie.
Yeah, maybe I saw it and
just forgot about it. Yeah. I remember me and Brandon were pretty obsessed with Blade in like seventh grade. So maybe you watched it at a sleepover or something.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
You know, I think Brandon secretly has the best taste in movies of any of us, because I remember that on sleepovers he also showed us My Cousin Vinny, which is an incredible movie, but not one you'd expect a high schooler to be into.
Yeah, right? No, Brandon does have really good taste in movies, which is why he's the best guest, and also like why he probably doesn't want to come on so often, because we watch such awful trash.
We should have made him watch Night Creature.
Oh, God. No. That would be a great way of ending our friendship. Night Creature and then 20 minutes of us talking about shitting in buckets. Both things that happened on that.
Yeah, he'd be cool with that one.
He also showed me The Fugitive on a sleepover, although then he balanced it out by showing me the first Saw and being super into it. Which, to be fair, you know, if you're a disturbed high schooler, Saw is sort of a movie that you're going to like no matter what. But, you know, it is a bad movie.
I mean, Saw changed the horror landscape, though. It was a big impact.
It's important, but it sucks. Like 9/11.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually haven't seen Saw 1, so.
It's not very good.
Didn't we watch it on the podcast?
No, we watched
the prequel, and it was terrible.
Oh.
Remember?
That's right.
Anyways, so does anyone else have an... I have kind of an interesting story about the first time I saw this, but Ronald, do you got anything on when you first saw it, or like what your general opinion...
I didn't really remember this movie that well. I remembered that I really loved it, like when I was in middle school, and I remember like getting really into vampires and Brandon and I buying the Vampire the Masquerade books. And just be like really obsessed with the mythos. But yeah, I didn't actually, when I watched this movie, I realized how little I actually remembered of it. So it was kind of a cool revisit.
Shit, I think I actually have you and Brandon's copy of Vampire the Masquerade then, because I borrowed it off him and never returned it.
Oh, nice. No, I'm glad somebody has it.
Yeah. Anyways, so I was sort of aware of this because, you know, if you were, middle to high schooler in the 1990s, you know about fucking Blade if you were a dude. But I first saw this for a class in college, weirdly. I took a kind of blow off class on vampirism, and this is one of the ones the teacher showed us. She thought it had something kind of deep to say about race. I do not think so, or if it has something deep to say about race, it is so deeply buried under other stupid shit that it doesn't matter. But so we watched it in class, and I don't think I wrote a paper on it, but I definitely could have. So, yeah.
Is that one of those honors classes?
Nah, it was just it was listed as English, German, and a film class because she was in the German department. We watched movies and we read stuff. And it was pretty good as a blow-off class because you didn't have to work very hard.
I'm interested to hear if you remember anything about what the teacher's theory on the... Yeah.
What was the racial component of this? Yeah.
Let's talk about it after the summer.
Yeah, let's talk about it after the summer.
But yeah. Right. Okay, so let's go around and first, would you recommend this? I'll go first. I think that this movie might be a tad overrated. I think it's definitely a certified action classic, but I also, like, having rewatched it, I don't think the script really holds together. It's just sort of a Wesley Snipes delivery vehicle. But on the other hand, Wesley Snipes is kind of incredible. So, yeah, you should definitely watch this movie at least once. And especially if you can turn off your brain and get back in the teenager headspace, you'll have a great time. But I think the people who say that this is like a lost masterpiece, probably mostly remembering how they felt watching it when they were teenagers. I still would have much rather have this be the template for superhero movies than Iron Man, the way we ended up. And I really regret the loss of Wesley Snipes as like a, you know, big box office star. But, you know, this is a good movie, not a great movie, in my opinion. Ronald?
This movie fucking rules. I do agree that the script kind of sucks. But God, Wesley Snipes, I forgot how fucking cool he was. Like, it's really such a tragedy that he was in jail for basically what would have been the prime of his career. Yeah, he's awesome. I love that this movie has so much just like random martial arts in it. Back in the 90s, that was such a template in action movies. And I was lamenting to these guys when I was watching it about how I wish that was still the case. It's made his comeback a little bit, but it's not the same. And I just feel like people it's not edited or shot the same anymore as it was in the 90s at martial arts. Like, the Jackie Chan era of martial arts in the United States was, it just hasn't been matched since. Like, there's been other great martial arts movies made outside of the United States, and maybe low budget ones that are really good, but in the mainstream cinema, I mean, you don't see very good stuff. Some of the choreography can still be good, but then they edited the shit. So anyways, that's a rant. This movie was really cool. Wesley Snipes was awesome. Definitely worth a watch. It's a very stupid movie. A lot of it barely makes any sense. But it also has, I don't know, it has like some charm. It's definitely not a lost masterpiece, but this is a classic, I would say. And it changed, I think it changed some of people's perceptions on superhero movies. So.
Yep. And Rahul, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought I would definitely recommend this. Like you were saying about the template for superhero movies, I like seeing things that were like primordial in the whole superhero movie universe. And I feel like this is one of them. I also like that they didn't like dick around with power levels a lot. I mean, a little bit, but like not too much, you know. Blade was still reasonable the whole time. That was great. I don't know. 90s movies are just like balm to my soul. So I pretty much always recommend them. So
yeah, it's what we grew up on. Right?
It is. Yeah. It just feels good to watch them. I don't know why. So yes, I definitely recommend it.
Okay. Yeah. So pretty strong recommends for all three of us. And definitely, you know, like if you watch this as a kid, you might not like it quite as much as you do as an adult, but it's not going to be like, oh my God, what was I thinking? You will still have a fucking great time with it. Anyways, let's go ahead and get into the summary. So Rahul will be 1-2, I'll be 3-4, and Ronald will be 5-6.
Sounds good.
Ronald, it's a 6, so I believe you're up, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm going to give you an option because we've been kind of going back and forth on this. Do you want to try to bomb this out in a minute 30 and achieve eternal glory, or do you want to take the coward's route of 3 minutes? Your call.
I'm doing a minute 30.
Let's okay, go. A minute fucking 30. Ronald has,
I'm throwing down the gauntlet.
Yeah, he's hit the drop-down menu and selected Mythic Plus.
I think I'm going to get it faster. I'm going to go real bare bones here.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, hit it, dude.
Okay, Blade, it starts off with Blade's born as from a woman who was infected as a vampire when she was pregnant. So he becomes out. He has all of their strengths, none of their weaknesses. Cuts to a club. He kicks some vampire ass. He's just hunting vampires. Everyone's scared of him. He's hunting this guy called Deacon Frost, who maybe infected his mom. He is chasing down some vampires. He meets this one girl who gets infected, but he like kind of stops her, and she's a blood scientist, whatever. He ends up finding Deacon Frost, who has this crazy plot to summon this thing called a blood god, by gathering 12 pure bloods and sacrificing them and becoming the blood god. And Blade kind of gets captured, and they need Blade's blood, so they capture him and they use him too. But then he kind of interrupts the ceremony. He ends up fighting Deacon Frost, uses his sword, cuts him the fuck, but it doesn't work. And then he uses some crazy formula that the blood scientist figured out to explode the blood god. And that's the end.
Wow, you have 25 more seconds.
Also, there's a weird part where he almost makes out with his own mom. And the scientist, I think, cures vampirism? Question mark? It's a little unclear if, like, how that would work. With genetic therapy, maybe?
As she notes, they do it with, I think, people with sickle cell anemia. So, yeah, checks out. Yeah,
close enough. And they also don't do that.
Yeah.
Especially back in the 90s, they do not have that technology.
Yeah, I don't think that we have valid gene therapies that work on adults for anything now.
I mean, like, maybe there's stuff that works, but it's definitely not approved.
Oh, yeah. So anyways, but good. You know what? She's a girl boss, and she cured vampirism, and we simply must stand.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's a superhero movie, so it's fine. But the way she casually is like, oh, yeah, I'll just use gene therapy. It's like, what?
And if it was that easy, why didn't Blade do it at some point?
Yeah, right.
Well, she does clarify that gene therapy, that whatever she came up with, it only works for people who weren't born that way, and Blade was born that way. It's her little combat.
She says that might work on Blade, but it would take away his power. So at the end, he's like, no, I got to keep killing vampires. So could you just fix my, could you give me, make it so that I'm not slowly turning into a vampire instead of just curing my vampirism?
This kind of thing has always been a sore spot for me, is just like people who are just too good at stuff. Like, I get that it's a superhero movie, but you know, it's just annoying. Like, if you take the latest Spider-Man, friggin' Peter Parker is able to just like use this technology to just, it's just magic, you know, he just like does so much that took like,
yeah, and he's in high school science
and movies to figure out, and he's just like done. Yeah. Like, bro, like, come on.
Well, I mean, how are they gonna show it in a movie?
I know they can't. Yeah. They can't. It's just too much to put on a character.
Having Spider-Man have to go in and apply for grants and do like 20 years of research to revolutionize material science so that he can have webbing. It's just, it's not a good movie.
I would like it more.
Well, I think it comes from like back in the 50s when comics were really big, and a lot of these characters in 40s and 50s when these characters were made, people didn't know what the fuck science was or like what scientists did. And so they were just like, you know, this guy's a scientist, so of course he could make up like some crazy new formula.
He just like does stuff with like radiation, man. Yeah. He's like fucking super, bro.
Yeah. Anything radiation related, he can do.
And also, I think just in like the, about the 1800s through about 1950s, we knew so little about how anything worked that it was really easy to revolutionize like four or five different fields over the course of your life if you were smart. Or maybe that's just sour grapes about the fact that I haven't revolutionized like three different fields of science.
Yeah, get to it, man.
Jesus, Lawrence. I'm on two. Like, what are you on?
He's on track for 40 under 40 or whatever. Yeah.
Rahul has revolutionized the study of Rahulonomics and the studies of Rahulology.
They're both pretty.
Voracoid is going to be the one that revolutionizes Rahulonomics.
Yeah. Anyways, so let's get to some fucking high points. I want to go first. So this is a little bit of a weird casting, but they have Donald Logue playing a double role in this. He plays both this shitty vampire whose name I forget, and who's just this weird white trash like vampire who's always cackling and seems like he's on cocaine. But he also plays Blade's elderly mentor Whistler, and I thought that was very bold casting, and he did great in both roles.
Lawrence is lying. Actually, you know what? Donald Logue looks nothing like Chris Christopherson. I don't understand this joke.
What joke? It's a serious point about... We all remember when Donald Logue played that weird motorcycle guy at Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. He's been a national treasure for 50 years.
they're like at least 20 years apart in age.
Well, that's what makeup's for, Ronald.
Huh. All right. Yeah, that was a high point. You know what? Sure.
I guess on a more serious note, whoever designed Blade's costume needs to get win like a fucking Oscar. if they have Oscars for costume design. And if not, they need to fucking create an Oscar in costume design and give it to that dude for at least 5 years, starting now. Because, Jesus Christ, it's one of the best costumes there has ever been.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a high point.
Yeah.
It's Blade's sword. It's just his defense mechanism is so ludicrous.
It's so insane.
That it's amazing.
Now, this is, I think the sword might be silver, but it is not like a super like technology sword, and it does not appear to be magic, correct?
Correct.
I don't think so, yeah.
Yeah, but for some reason it has more of a protection mechanism on it than any of his guns.
I mean, and you know what's, I feel like all he has to do is just like put silver on the hilt and they can't touch it.
Yeah.
But instead he has this elaborate mechanism.
Yeah, you're right.
That like shoots blades out of the handle.
Well, they can wear cigarette gloves.
People's hands.
Yeah.
They can wear gloves.
So I guess Blade has this thing on his blade where, hilarious, yeah, where if you don't flick a switch shortly after grabbing it, about 5 seconds later, spikes will shoot out of it with such velocity that they will like tear your hand off somehow, or like break stone, which are both things that happen in the movie.
It doesn't just tear his hands off. It like blows them up.
Yeah, it somehow like explodes his hand.
Well, that was a vampire though, and it was silver, I assume.
Oh, okay.
So I assume that's why it exploded.
But it does crack stone though.
Maybe that was vampiric stone.
Yeah, that, you know, that's not as clear why that's happening.
Yeah. Anyways, sorry.
Yeah, I have a high point.
Hit me.
So Udo Kier is in this movie, and he's basically the CEO of vampires. And for some reason, there's a whole council that basically act like a business council of vampires that basically try and reprimand people who act out of line and just like try and do things that are, you know, for the good of the company, aka all of the vampires. And they don't seem to have any kind of authority or protection, but they still kind of, you know, just waggle their fingers at people who aren't purebloods or whatever. That's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, and they also have a nebulous treaty with human politicians. It's unclear what that means, but I guess that's why, like, people know about vampires, but they don't do anything. Because there's this treaty between them and the human politicians, and as long as they kill under a certain number of people, you know, the politicians leave them alone. Unclear what the politicians get out of this. I assume just money, but, you know, could be other stuff.
Yeah. Or I guess maybe just like they also don't have to go to war with all of the vampires.
Yeah. So I have another high point, and this is kind of a circuitous one. But first of all, at one point, Blade goes into an archive and Frost appears to have been using a computer program to decipher an ancient vampire book of prophecy. The vampires, who are immortal, have just kind of forgotten how to read for some reason, right?
I guess.
Yeah. Unclear. But Blade goes down into the archives, and it turns out that this translation was being done by an enormously fat vampire who, I guess, either wrote the program that did it or was translating it and pretending to be the program. They never really explain. And this
thought he was a hacker and he hacked the information.
I thought he was like the 90s guy.
Yeah.
So you're
saying he had like 10 screens. I assume that means he's a hacker.
I assumed it meant he was a linguist.
Huh. That makes more sense, but
Vampiguist.
But like, exactly. You gotta understand 90s logic in movies. Somebody has a bunch of computer screens. They're a computer guy.
What does the fat part have to do with it?
Well, he doesn't move much.
Yeah, because like that was the stereotype of people who like sit in their parents' basement and play on their computer all day.
The real question I have is, was he that fat before they made him into a vampire, or can vampires somehow gain weight by drinking too much blood?
I have no clue.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, because like it seemed like no one else could change shape, but I don't know. I guess maybe that's just an interview.
Maybe
with
he was
thing.
That fat before he became a vampire.
But then why did someone make this man who, I mean, I don't want to fat shame, but he is so obese that he is immortal and can only lie in a puddle on the floor. Why did they make this man who probably had a minute to live?
Because, let me explain his backstory. This is a man who fell in love at the University of Vampiro Linguistics, and he just holed himself up like a hermit because he needed to crack this mystery so that he could resurrect the hottest vampiress in the world. And it took so much out of him that he just decided to eat only Cheetos. And he's just like Amazon priming them to himself. And he gained so much weight. And then Frost found him and decided to turn him because he needed his skills.
Wait, so he was a human who went to the school of vampiro linguistics.
Yep.
I assume it's affirmative action type thing where they're like a certain percentage has to be living people.
Who are the teachers there? Because it doesn't seem like anyone fucking knows anything.
Now, here's a weird twist. The teachers are all mummies.
Oh. You know, that checks out.
Yeah.
You know, okay. It's like a Vampire the Masquerade kind of situation.
Do you think they're going to explore this in the Blade remake?
Yes. The Blade remake is entirely that Batman. The
PG-13 Blade remake, they just focus on this one character.
Yeah. So anyways, my high point is a little bit that, but mostly, so when I was in seventh grade, right? I heard some classmates discussing this movie that I had not seen. And for some reason, one of them said that there was a very explicit sex scene of just a woman riding this vampire's dick, which was proportional to his body and therefore about like 5 feet long and just moving up and down on it in kind of a nightmare scenario. And that has stuck with me for my entire life. So I guess in a way this movie has shaped who I am even before I had seen it.
Which version did he see?
Yeah, wait, that didn't happen, right? See that. Yeah.
No, I assume he saw the weird liar teenager version.
Okay.
That exists only in his head.
That's such a specific lie though.
Yeah, I know. It's very strange.
Was that kid you?
No. Yeah. So yeah. Anyways, anyone else got some high points?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a high point.
Go for it.
Okay, so there's a part where they're trying to sacrifice the 12 purebloods, and then, like, for no reason at all, this lady assistant of Deacon Frost just kills one of the purebloods because he pisses her off or something. And then I guess she has to sacrifice herself instead, which is funny in itself. But I was reading about the Blade mythos and what the Blood God is. And apparently the reason that Blade was able to defeat it was because it wasn't actually 12 purebloods and she killed one of them. So it's really funny to me that she just like fucked it up for no reason.
Dude, that is fantastic.
Yeah. I think that's a really cool little bit of mythos.
They should have put that in the movie.
I mean, it is in the movie. It's just not explicitly spelled out.
They should have made it more explicit that she contaminated the blood with her stupidity. That would have been sick.
Yeah. Oh, this incidentally ties into what the point my teacher was trying to make, which is that this movie is sort of about hybridity and race in this very strange way, because the vampires are constantly obsessed over whether they're pure bloods or half bloods. Pure blood in this case means that you're born a vampire, which apparently vampires do come. In this story, and can get each other pregnant, which a lot of questions there, whatever. And then half breed means that you were like,
you're infected.
Right, infected with vampirism. But the movie appears to be arguing that the hybrids are stronger because the two most powerful characters in it are Frost and Blade, both of whom are in their own ways hybrids. I don't know if she thought about it much more than that, and I kind of think she might have just been trying to say some words so that she could watch Blade, but that was her argument.
And I think Blade Trinity, if you include that in the mythos, basically like ruins that whole thing, because the whole argument there is that the whole point of that movie is that Dracula is the original vampire, and basically his blood has become so thinned from human blood that like the current vampires are way weaker than him. So I don't know. I guess Blade still beats him in the end. So
yeah. And the other weird thing was she made us rewatch that one scene where Frost is trying to tempt him, which is one of the dumber scenes in the movie, and also features Frost calling him Uncle Tom, which is kind of an uncomfortable thing to have. You know, whatever. He's a bad guy. It's not like everything he's doing is supposed to be good. But that's just such a strange line to have in this movie that otherwise has no comment on race whatsoever. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can kind of see the parallels of vampirism versus humans, like some kind of I don't know, some kind of like, it's kind of like the mutants in X-Men of like, they're kind of downtrodden, but they're more powerful. And like parallelizing that with race. But I just don't think that this movie actually says anything interesting with that idea.
Yeah, I literally,
besides making some vague references.
Yeah, especially since in that scene, that is, like, as I said, one of the dumbest in the movie, because Blade's entire thing is that he hates vampires and wants to kill them all. And then this guy is just sort of like, hey, what if you stop killing us? And he doesn't really offer an explanation for why Blade should do that. And then he seems kind of annoyed when Blade just goes, no.
Yeah, what if you stop killing us and we just took over the world and killed all the humans? Like, what? Why would I do that?
And I think in a better script, this would have been the scene where you discover that his mother had been raised as a vampire and she could be the one to tempt him with the very specific, we could be together if you would just stop killing vampires. Your code requires you to kill me, but you don't want to. And use that to try to ez her in.
Yeah. I also feel like you'd have to show more humans being like not cool with Blade. Whereas in the movie, all we see is just like all the humans are like, oh, Blade's the coolest. And it's like, why would he resent that?
There is that one scene where the SWAT team shoots at him and then he looks at them and he's like, motherfucker, are you kidding?
Yeah, which that is incredible. Was a really hilarious line. Whoever wrote that, they deserve a freaking medal.
Yeah. But the bullets don't really seem to bother Blade. And also, they're shooting at him because he's a maniac running around a hospital carrying an unconscious woman and holding a sword and guns. It's not like, you know, him being part vampire has anything to do with it. Well,
to be fair to him, though, there was an insane zombie fucking monster that he was fighting when that happened. And they shot him instead of the zombie.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in that situation, you just shoot everybody and then deal with the aftermath later because... You know.
Hey, what did you get? Like normal cop training?
Okay, but he's got a sword and gun, so I don't know.
Yeah.
He should not have those at a hospital. Also, when he says no to Frost, the way he says no to Frost is by shooting several bullets at him, and then the camera goes into slow mode, you see Frost dodge out of the way, but right behind Frost are several normal humans that are very clearly in the bullet's path.
Well, I mean, Blade, you know, it's collateral damage. It happens. Yeah.
Gotta kill a few humans.
Yeah, gotta crack a few eggs and make an omelet.
Raul, do you have another high point?
Yeah, I do. When the movie introduces Frost, it's like so perfect because he's like the quintessential 90s bad guy. I can't even describe where you find dudes like this, but.
He came straight out of a ska concert.
Yes.
He has like a leather jacket and a tie and he's smoking a cigarette.
And like,
yeah.
he looks like he's probably on some kind of really fantastic party drug. He's very irreverent, but also hot. You know,
he might have been in the movie Fight Club.
Yeah.
Honestly, he would have fit in perfectly. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I was like, couldn't even help but laugh. I was just like,
no, he's a great.
I was like, this guy is evil. Like, I just know it.
But he's sexy.
I love how he cuts with the council of vampires who are like these, you know, older guys in suits and like trying to run a business meeting. And he like, you know, kicks back with his feet up on the table, smoking a cigarette, not giving a shit. He's Gen X. Yeah.
Do you think if a vampire smokes enough cigarettes, they get lung cancer?
I don't know. It's very confusing what the powers of the vampire are, because at one point the scientist says that it's just a genetic disorder and that she can fix it by changing their blood so that they can retain iron or retain hemoglobin, which kind of confuses me why that would stop them from having vampire powers. But
yeah, they do honest to goodness magic at several points in this movie.
Right. The one guy regrows like both of his arms.
And yeah, multiple times.
They have this whole blood ritual to summon a god, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a genetic disorder style happening.
Well, they could do the blood god thing without vampirism. That's just regular magic. That's human magic, dude. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Okay, I got one more high point and then, you know, anyone else. So another thing that this has on modern superhero movies is that this is a really horny movie. Like, there is a scene where Frost has ripped the like throat out of someone and his face is covered in blood. And then another woman just starts sort of licking it off. And then when Blade meets his mother, for some reason, they're almost making out. And there are also a number of scenes where Blade and the woman he has rescued get pretty close. All of which, I mean, none of them are like, oh my God, this is so racy. And they're also extremely weird because, you know, blood, incest, etc. But you would never see anything this horny in a Marvel movie. And even the DC movies usually don't get this much. So I thought it was cool that it was sexed up. Oh, also, there's a pretty explicit blowjob scene that I was convinced was going to end with the guy that the woman giving the blowjob is a vampire. She bites his dick off or something. But nope, she's just, you know, going down on him. And yep, apparently vampires, in addition to eating blood, they eat cum.
This goes into one of my last high point is that I love how vampires are just like pure, like all they want to do is fucking party and kill people. Like that's apparently their entire life motivation is going to raves, like having sex, like killing people, drinking blood, like
hacking.
Those are the vampires we focus on, but there are, like, we see the businessmen vampires, and then there are also vampire valets. And I'm like, how bad do you have to fuck up to spend all of it, like, eternity being a valet?
That is a good point.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. It kind of begs the question of, like, how would they ever function as a society? No one wants to fucking do anything. Like, it makes sense that they would be in secret, because it's like, you know, they don't have, they can just use all of the humans to do all of the, you know, work. And they can just party and drink their blood in secret.
Sounds like a pretty good life.
Yeah, right? I can't blame them. I would take that.
Yeah. Ronald, do you have a last high point?
I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough. Let's get into some low points. I will start. So after the prologue, where they say it takes place in, I believe, the 70s, we jump forward to what the movie claims in a subtitle is now. But it is very clearly the mid to late 90s. So this movie is a fucking liar.
That's a fair point. Yeah. Why didn't it predict the future? And how come it doesn't change as time moves?
Or just say the year that it takes place. One of the two. But don't fucking lie to me, movie.
Well, you know what? It was true at one point. I've got a low point. Dude, what was up with Whistler in this movie? Like, should have been cool. You know, he's like this, he's like the guy who like builds, and I remember really liking him as a kid, but like, he doesn't do anything. I feel like he is grumpy and he gets mad at Blade for bringing along new people. And I guess he builds all the weapons, kind of, but.
And the serum.
And he at one point blows through a wall and then lackadaisically kind of sprays the room one-handed with a machine gun.
Yeah.
The way you or I might operate a hose while we're watering a garden.
Yeah, but it really felt like his character was only in it to be killed, like, and, you know, hold a place of sympathy for...
Yeah, he was like a pseudo-father figure to Blade.
Yeah,
but
he was Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It, like, barely mattered.
Right.
Blade doesn't really want to show emotions.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you have the Obi-Wan Kenobi because when you put in the Obi-Wan Kenobi character, they have to be better than your main character. Or at least more experienced and, you know, they're the guy you go to in an emergency situation. And when they die, you realize, oh shit, the only one left is me. But when Whistler dies, that's not what it feels like. I mean, it feels like a little sad, but... You know, it's like, well, he didn't do that much.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he'll probably be fine.
It's already set up so that the woman is going to take over the
scene. Right, yeah. It's like pretty convenient.
Yeah. Incredibly convenient.
And the next movie, they're like, yeah, we don't like that decision. So they just bring him back and it doesn't matter.
I was going to say, I remember Whistler being in the second one. So did he not die?
The vampires got him and used him as bait for Blade. But then it just worked out fine. He gets replaced by that dude from The Walking Dead and Death Stranding, but then that dude betrays Blade, but then Blade's like, I knew you were going to betray me and it doesn't matter. And it's just fine because one of the problems with the Blade series is that Blade isn't really allowed to be wrong or have faults, which is fine because this is not really a series about Blade growing as a character. It's about Blade karate chopping vampires and stabbing them and shit.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at it from like a traditional, what should a movie be? he's supposed to have character development, you know, and he does it. He's awesome in the first frame. He's awesome in the last frame. I guess you could argue that he starts as a baby and then grows up, which is kind of character development, but you don't really see that happen.
You know, I thought that him having to kill his mom was going to be like a hard thing for him.
Yeah, no, he fucking diced her. No remorse.
It's hard for him initially because his hands are tied, but as soon as they're untied, no problem at all.
What a great character.
Yeah. And like leading from that, I also think that like okay, the power levels aren't messed up in this, but Blade does not face any challenges in this movie. The biggest challenge he has, his most powerful adversary, is the Blood God at the end. Once it's like, you know, that's the trump card. Once it goes through, Blade's fucked, right? Except he immediately fucks it up. Like, they have like a sword fight for like 2 seconds, and then he chops it into bits. And then he's like, oh no, it came back. Like, it regrew its arm because it's a Blood God. I can't kill it that way. And he chops it up again, and then it grows back again. And then he immediately hits it with the formula, which blows it up. And it's like, oh, cool. You didn't even have to try. Like, Blade is so much stronger that they summoned a fucking god, and it still couldn't even fight him on, like, even terms.
It took him two minutes to kill a god.
If you see the shirtless scene with Snipes, and I think it's pretty clear that he is the strongest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The movie is not trying to hide that fact. I'm not saying that.
Dude, he's the most
inconsistent.
By far.
Look, we're not saying that Snipes isn't cut like glass, shredded like lettuce, abs like a Ninja Turtle, etc. It's just that from the standpoint of a movie, the final fight, he should lose it for like 90% of it, and then at the last second, when he's overmatched, defeat the guy through cleverness. And that does not really happen. He appears to be in control of the situation most of the time.
He did almost get totally exsanguinated. So maybe that was that.
But then the lady showed up and it was fun.
Right, it was fine.
You know, you could argue that like five guys with shock batons are harder on Blade than this god.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they were. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe the five guys with shock batons should be the god instead.
I also thought it was really funny how he had this isn't really a low point, but he had this like fighting rival the whole time who's played by Donald Logue, and they fight like three times and Blade keeps chopping off his hands, but he keeps coming back, and they like set it up for like this big final confrontation, and Blade just like insta fucking kills him. Like he runs at him, and then it's just like over in less than a second.
It's
he runs by
Blade
him and he fucking explodes.
Blade does like a single fluid motion and the guy dies. Like the way that like the bad guy will kill someone like a mook just in their introduction to show that they're serious, you know?
Yeah. Right, exactly. He's just, oh, okay. And it started to make me think that this movie had Blade be the bad guy, and Deacon Frost was the good guy, and he lost in the end.
Well, you know, the beginning, the very first, like, I don't know, minute or so, when Blade just walks into the nightclub and starts killing everything, almost makes you feel like he is the bad guy.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you're just looking at it from a poor, innocent vampire...
Yeah.
He's just trying to get his next fix. This guy is just killing everything. He's
just
committing genocide.
With silver blade. Like, what the fuck? That's so uncouth.
Those vampires, there's like 40 of them, and they're only killing one guy, apparently, which pretty good ratio for a vampire, I feel. You know?
I feel the same way.
I mean, I guess we never find out if that the blood rave sprinklers or blood is ethically sourced or not. They might have like put a million people into a blender for that or something.
They're like, is this cow blood?
They didn't even drink that blood.
Yeah, that
covered themselves in it.
And sort of writhed around sexily, and I discovered, well, never mind, we're moving on.
He discovered a new kink for him.
Yeah, but
I love how Blade, like, okay, the blood sprinklers are going off, everyone's having a good time, and then Blade's there, and, like, there's nothing, like, he's immaculate.
He's somehow clean, yeah, I know, I was like, how did he not get any blood on him? It's everywhere.
The other thing I love about his entrance is that before he says anything, the music died, but we later see that the DJ is still alive, so the DJ just spotted Blade, he's like, oh shit, he's gonna do a dramatic entrance and turn the music off.
No, and then he changed the music for the killing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's got to set the mood.
That's what a good DJ's for, you know?
Blade walked up to him before he came in, and he's like, here's, I don't know, 5 vials of blood, and I will kill you. Put this disc in when I start the sword play.
He made a request. It's like a DJ at a wedding.
Yeah. Let's see. I've got a, this is not a low point at all, but I've got a line that is just so strange. So first off, well, a couple of them. First off, when Donald Logue finds out about the Blood God, which he finds out surprisingly late in the process of summoning the Blood God, Frost is like, we're going to be gods, vampire gods. And Donald Logue goes, I'm going to be a naughty vampire god.
He probably would have.
And then I think Frost, like, final, you mean nothing to me. I'm so much more powerful than you line to Blade is, look at you. You're a little bitch. Which, not a, that, it, like, terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Blade's final line, of course, is the iconic, some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill. Which, ambiguous what that means, but very cool.
The delivery really sells that one.
Yeah.
Because it's Wesley Snipes. If it was somebody else saying that, you would have just been like, what the hell were they thinking? You know, like, who the hell wrote that line? Because it was Wesley Snipes, like, it totally worked.
And the other thing is that when Blade is explaining that Whistler is dying, the woman is like, what's wrong? And Blade goes, cancer. And the way he says it is very funny to me.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, okay. Another thing. So the vampires have this, like, the vampires for some reason hang out exclusively in, like, weird nightclubs.
Yes. So
the first
which is illegal according to the council.
Yeah. The council does not want vampires getting down and getting funky. But anyways, so the first one is the blood rave. If you've heard anything about this movie, you've heard about. But the second one, for some reason, it's some kind of Japanese club where there are Japanese schoolgirls rapping, I think badly, although I don't speak Japanese. And then you go behind it into a meat locker and there's a vampire archive underneath. Strange stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where else would you keep it, you know?
Yeah, where else you keep your precious archival material.
Yeah, I guess that Blade set in New York, because, like, isn't that, like, a thing? Like, the meatpacking district has, like, a bunch of clubs because they use, like, the big areas that they don't use at night.
Now, Ronald, this may surprise you, but I have only been to one rave in my entire life. I spent it sitting in a corner reading a source book for a White Wolf RPG, and I therefore have no idea if what the thing you said was true or not.
Okay, well, I've never been to a rave in New York. I feel like I've read about it.
So I've been to a number of vampire raves, and only about half of them were involved in, like, meatpacking industry stuff. So
that seems like a pretty high amount.
I give this a B plus in terms of accuracy.
Yeah.
Well, how is that a B plus? One of the ones in the movie was in the meatpacking, and the other one wasn't.
You know, it's just because I'm a tough grader.
Oh, okay. Nobody's perfect.
Nobody gets an A. All right. Yeah.
And as far as my grade for raves in general, I'm going to give them a C and say that the flashing lights make it very hard to read Prometheus the Created.
That's fair. Yeah. Oh, and I'm gonna give this one a D for accuracy, because why is the butcher still working? You know, that's the whole point of having the raves and the meatpacking fucking places, because they're off work.
You know what? I'm going to give this an F for accuracy, because I don't think vampires are real.
Oh, man, dude, that's wrong. That's way wrong. Vampires are real, and they haunt me.
Yeah.
They tap on my window at night.
Anyone else got any low points?
Yeah, I have one low point.
Hit it.
So in the end, they throw the woman down this, like, deep, dark hole. And they're like, and they, like, kind of, like, make it seem like there's this big, bad monster down there. They're like, oh, this guy will eat anything, man. Fuck, dude. You know, like, they're disposing of her, basically. Like, they're basically giving her to a rancor, is kind of the vibe I was getting.
Uh-huh.
And then it's the dude from the very beginning who got turned into a vampire, who is somehow the shittiest vampire of all. Like, all the other vampires, like, totally healed up and they were cool. But this vampire is, like, he's more like a zombie than a vampire. And yeah. Not only is he disgusting and like rotting and falling apart, she beats the shit out of him and just climbs out of the hole.
Yeah.
Well, like... and they also say something like, oh yeah, that happens like half the time when somebody gets infected. And it's like, what? Like, are we going to walk past that line? Like, I've seen zero other zombies in this movie.
Oh, I must have missed that line. They said it happened to half the people?
They say that sometimes the embrace doesn't work and they're left with whatever that guy is. And then that guy seems like just kind of an annoying nerd. And I'm not sure he's even menacing her, but she just beats the shit out of him and leaves.
Yeah, I don't get how he was threatening. I mean, he was...
I guess he still eats people.
Well, yeah, but... Like, he's weak. He's so weak.
He spends half of his time talking about how he's rotting, and the other half trying to rekindle his relationship with her.
He's like, do you regret leaving me now? And then she beats the shit out of him.
And I mean, obviously, yes, because he looks gross and he's an asshole.
Yeah, it's way worse. Like, I regret it less now.
But from the movie, I was like, why did they talk this guy up? Because he just sucked so bad.
Now, I think that was supposed to be kind of a joke reveal, but I don't know.
That would have made sense. Yeah. I didn't feel a joke.
I didn't get the humor. Yeah, it was like almost there.
I was like, dude, like you vampires have zero problem killing like anything in your way, and now the way you get rid of her is to drop her down a hole with like the equivalent of a house cat. Like,
oh, dude, house cats are scary when they get rattled. This guy was not.
No, this guy was like, I don't even know.
Like, I'm not convinced I could beat a house cat in a fight if it was like really trying to fight me.
I probably couldn't, but if I had a weapon, I could.
I mean, I know Lawrence could because he can beat any animal that walks the earth or whatever. But
yeah, yep. I mean, for fun.
That is my thing.
Yeah. Okay, I've got another low point.
Hit us.
When Frost turns into the Blood God, he comes out to fight Blade, right? But for some reason he pulls out a katana that we have not seen in the movie, or maybe we see it briefly. He's never used it though. Oh. And there's no reason he would use a blade, and he sucks with it. So it was like, why'd you do that? Why didn't you get a gun or something?
Or use Blood God powers on him. You went into all this trouble to get Blood God powers, and now you're just hitting him with a sword. You could have done that before.
Exactly. And like, okay, and that leads to another low point of mine, which is, why do the vampires suck so much? Like, it seems like if you touch them with silver even a little bit, they just fucking explode. Same with light, and I couldn't tell with the garlic. I guess it doesn't...
No, the garlic...
It's bad, but it's basically like acid.
When she squirts that woman in the mouth with it, her head explodes.
Yeah, okay, well, there you go.
Well, and that's like, why vampires can't take over, because they're just really...
Explosive.
They're just explosive.
Yeah, they suck. I mean, they seem worse than humans.
If a human
got the right weaponry, you know, if they know what's happening, like, vampires kind of suck.
I mean, like, so they when they executed the fat vampire for no reason, they used a UV light, and that's like, dude, you can just walk around with the UV light on your head.
Yeah, that win. This like this is explored in Blade 2. It turns out it's pretty easy to kill vampires, honestly.
Yeah. He has light grenades, I think, in that one.
Yeah. Also, it's weird to me that this woman went from, I'm not sure I know how to fire a gun, to, I am down for torturing this man to death in the course of about 12 hours.
That scene was kind of brutal, right? Yeah. Okay, so there's the scene where they're trying to get information out of the fat guy who's stuck in bed. He can't move because he's too fat, I guess.
Even though he's a vampire, it seems
he's a vampire. You can't even really see his limbs because he's basically just like a head and then like a cube of meat.
And then he has this like rat like voice. I don't even know how to describe it.
I don't know why it's so high pitched. It's really weird. But like, okay, so anytime this guy stops giving me information, they shine a UV light on him, which burns him to hell like instantly. But like, when she does it, they go on way longer than you think would be. Like, you think, you know, that you'd flash him really quick and then stop and be like, come on, give me the information, I'll keep doing it. But she just goes on for like 10 seconds, just like waving it all over his body before giving him another chance. And it's brutal. He's just screaming the whole time. And you're like, what are you doing? Just turn it off. Like, oh my God.
This is by far the most sympathetic vampire we've encountered. We never see him kill anyone. And it seems like he probably couldn't.
And he just seems like he's doing some research. Like, I don't know. If you've learned about that there was a real god and you found a way that you could bring him, like, bring him into the world, if you could bring like a Greek god into the world through some crazy ritual, I'd be interested. I'm not saying I'd do it, but I would read about it.
I'm pretty sure you'd do it.
Well, you know, that's off the record.
The other thing is that when he sees Blade, he immediately farts. It's like, give him a little dignity. Come on, guys. The fart effect is gratuitous.
It's so sad. Like, this poor guy is just laying in bed, and Blade comes and tortures him and then kills him.
It's like nobody else is, like, tortured.
I know. Everyone else gets such a clean death, but for some reason, this poor vampire who's like misfigured gets tortured for a long time on screen.
The disabled vampire.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. Anyone else got any other parting shots? I've got one I'd like to exit on, if not.
I've got nothing.
Okay. So, Raul?
No, nothing.
Okay, this is just a bit of dialogue between Whistler and Blade that really struck me for some reason. So Whistler goes, "You get a lead on him?" "No." "Too bad." And that's it. I don't know why.
Wait, so was that a low point or a...
It's just a line that I thought was funny. Oh, and then Blade, Wesley Snipes desperately tries to sell the line, "It's open season on all suckheads." But he can't because... it's suckheads.
If anyone could sell it, it's him, and it didn't work.
And they could say swears, too, so they needed something better than suckhead.
This is rated R, right?
Yeah, he says fuck multiple times, and there's that blowjob scene.
Yeah, I don't know if the blowjob scene would get you to rated R. That doesn't even... that's nothing.
Yeah, it didn't even show a brain.
Yeah, dude.
Blowjobs perfectly suitable for the family.
Seriously, does the impression of a blowjob get you to R?
I think, well, okay, the motherfucker and everything does. How's that?
You can say fuck once in PG-13, right?
Yeah, and it has to be non-sexual too, which seems like such a strange... it's either the word should be okay to use or it shouldn't. The once in a certain way is such a strange rule.
Yeah.
Like, I find it so weird that PG-13 movies can show so much violence, but like any portrayal of sex or curse words, oh no.
Yeah,
it's like
ludicrous.
Instant R. What the hell?
Yeah, but seriously, doubling back on the fuck thing. So the point of not having the word fuck in PG-13 movies is we don't want to teach the kids to know the word fuck, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what good is that rule then if they're like, okay, you're allowed to use it once, but only in a certain context? Because you've like, if a kid sees that, they know the word fuck. So...
because they don't want people associating sex with the movies. I don't know.
Yeah, it's dumb. The whole thing is stupid. They should have full-on fucking and penetration in movies. That's what I say.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm about it.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, 80s comedian voice. Why don't they make the whole movie out of the pornography? Anyways.
They would if you watched any of the other movie when you're watching
it. Okay, so anyways, we have a game. And I'm retiring Law Day briefly because it was mostly turning into an excuse to bully me, which, you know, is what it is. But instead, we're bringing...
Hi, are you ready to hear my wish?
God damn it. I shouldn't have said that. That's the problem with bullies. If you ever show weakness, they just double down. But anyways, we're bringing back Beat the Gin. And... I'm going to go first because, you know, it's been a while, right? All right. So I'm going to say the wish, and then I'm going to explain why I think I have come up with a wish that can beat the djinn.
Okay.
So the wish is, I wish I was in the death core of Krieg. Now, my argument for why this is going to beat the djinn is pretty simple. I don't think the djinn is going to know what the fuck the death core of Krieg are. And I think by the time I finished explaining 40K to him enough that he can understand them, he's going to be bored and either just grant me the wish or say fuck off. And in either case, you know, I'm not going to get fucked over. Mm. And the most of the ways, and I, also, is it even within the djinn's power to create the universe of 40K some to the point where the death core of Krieg can exist and I can be in them, you know?
Yeah. You know what? Here's what the djinn would do. He would be like... before you even started your explanation, he would say, granted. And then you would shrink down to a miniature size and you'd be inside of a giant book and you'd realize you're on one of the pages explaining the death core of Krieg in the manual of 40K miniatures. And the book would close and you'd get squished.
Oh, shit.
Permanently inside the... Decor Creek.
Yeah. Raul, you got a pitch on this one? If not, I actually did just realize how he would get me on this, but Raul, hit me.
He'd make your wish come true. He'd be in the Deathcore of Creek.
But you'd only get to live for like a second and the nuke would go off.
And then the djinn would collect on all of humanity because the Krieg destroyed the entire world.
You know what? I died for the Emperor, and no man who died for the Emperor died in vain.
Oh, you died for the djinn.
Emperor djinn.
Okay, all right, so how would he get you, Lawrence?
He'd go, your wish is granted. And then he'd just turn me into a fucking miniature of the Deathcore of Krieg, and I'd be stuck like that screaming as a plastic man forever.
That is what would happen. And you'd be like, why did I say alive?
Yeah, why did I say in the setting of 40K? I really needed to get more specific. Yeah. Okay, Ronald, what's your wish?
Okay, I have a weird one today. And I'm really interested to hear Rahul's take on this. Okay. I'd be like, djinn, I wish for the speed of light to increase to infinity.
Well, we have seen the djinn reject wishes, haven't we?
Yes, but like, I think those were having to do with like fucking himself over.
Yeah, those ones he's like, you can't make a wish that specifically relates to me or something.
Well, that relates to him, I would say.
Not specifically. That's, you can't get more general than changing one of the constants of the universe.
I'm sorry, that specifically, it does not target you.
I honestly have no idea what that would do to the universe, but
I don't know what
that would means. Be interested to see it before I fucking exploded. Or
I don't think
happened.
You're going to see anything.
Yeah, I think if the speed of light does that, your eyes cease to work.
Really?
For starters, yeah. It seems like, I don't pretend to understand photons, but it seems like them going infinitely fast would do something to your eyes.
What? Yeah, I guess they have some kind of momentum.
That means everything in the universe instantly impacts everything else in the universe. The entire universe is entangled.
No, only the speed of light. Only the speed of light.
Well, but it means that like every time there's a photon slamming into something and bouncing off, it's suddenly imparting infinite force to that. Yeah, so I think it just destroys the universe.
From one end of the universe to the other end, it would instantly travel. So, you know, a black hole exploding over here would instantly incinerate.
Yeah.
I think the entire universe would just explode.
Sweet.
So he's doing it, obviously. Yeah. So the djinn's just gonna be like, sure thing, boss.
Well, he wouldn't have a universe to rule anymore.
I mean, presumably, as a supernatural creature, he's immune to
the. I'm just gonna call this one a
draw.
A draw. You know, the cat's game.
Because you killed everyone, but the djinn, but you killed everyone.
Yeah. So he doesn't have anything to do either. So, good job, djinn.
Yeah, my pitch on this is that he hands you a light bright, and then it shoots off infinitely fast into space. And he's like, I changed its speed to infinity.
What is a light bright?
It's a thing where it was backlit, and then you could put in like a sort of translucent pegs into it. It was like a square, kind of looked like an Etch-a-Sketch, but it had a light behind it, and you would put pegs into sort of holes on it, and then when you turned it on in a dark room, the light would go through the pegs and you could draw shapes with it.
It was pretty cool. I used to have a light bright.
Wait, so he made this thing go infinitely fast?
Yeah, but just at like an orthogonal distance to most of the planes of the universe. So it will impact something and destroy it, but he set it up so that it's not going to destroy anything in like the solar system.
Well, it'll become infinitely heavy then.
No. Unfortunately, it'd probably knock the Earth out of orbit.
Yeah, I mean, infinity's infinity, right? So it's going to suck the entire universe into it.
That's awesome.
Okay, fair enough. So if
it was moving infinitely fast, it would move away from us before it could ever interact with us, right?
I guess. No, but the gravitational wave, I don't know.
Gravitational wave can always travel at the
speed of light. Okay, so here's what we got to do. One of us, and I'm voting Ronald, needs to go get a doctorate in physics. And answer this question as his doctoral thesis.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, what? How would the djinn do this?
What happens if a light bright suddenly goes infinitely fast at an orthogonal angle to the plane of the universe, starting at Earth? And everyone's like, well, you did a lot of science. This is a very weird question, though.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Rahul, what do you got?
All right. I think I figured it out, boys.
All right.
This is how I beat the djinn for once and for all.
Yeah.
I focus on my most base desire at the current moment. So, djinn, I wish for some Taco Bell.
Oh,
and the djinn will grant it, and I'll get what I want.
Yeah.
And then definitely. Whatever happens after that doesn't matter because it's too late.
Yeah,
I got to Taco Bell.
You're living in ecstasy.
Yeah. Because I never planned on living beyond that moment.
Yeah, that's the end goal.
That's the secret to being the djinn, is to surrender.
Okay, so I'm going, here's my pitch. Yeah. So the djinn whips out a smartphone and he starts punching it in a Taco Bell order. The Taco Bell order is a taco party pack, half with beans, half with potatoes, half with red sauce, half with pico de gallo, with jalapenos. And he sends it away. And of course the Taco Bell rejects it. And then he's like, well, I tried. Later, loser. And leave.
That is really piss poor effort from the djinn.
Oh, djinn.
The djinn is lazy after the light bright incident.
That took a lot out of him.
Ronald, what are you going to do?
Okay, here's what the djinn would do. He would order you Taco Bell, but you didn't specify what. And so he would order you like the worst stuff on the menu, like the chicken tacos and like the fucking, you would probably get like a Pizza Hut, like Olive's pizza or something. I don't, whatever you don't like.
Wait, you don't like Olive's on pizza?
No, I do, but you know, not everyone does.
He orders you one of those horrible personal pan pizzas that they sell like combination Taco Hut, Taco Bell Pizza Hut.
It's the worst. It has the toppings on it that have been clearly sitting out for a long
time. No, order.
No one orders them, so they've always been sitting under a heat lamp for at least 10 hours. It's like dried out. The grease has started doing really weird stuff from being that hot for that long.
It's turned into crude oil.
It's also a combination KFC and gets you like some of those like tenders from KFC that are like way dry.
He goes off menu and somehow gets them to make a KFC double down for you.
Dry tenders?
Yeah, the chicken tenders at KFC are pretty bad, dude.
They're named tender for a reason.
Well, it's false advertising, you see.
For God's sake.
You know, this is
nothing sacred at KFC.
This conversation is making me very hungry, even though we're talking about disgusting food.
Yeah, we're talking about like
the worst possible things you can order. I'm like, damn, that sounds kind of good right now.
Fucking djinn ruined my life, dude.
I mean, that is how Taco Bell works. Like, even when you're like laughing at how horrible they are, you're also secretly in the back of your mind like, yeah, but I'll keep eating that.
Yeah, I would eat it.
Is Taco Bell really that horrible, though?
No, they're pretty good, but they're also horrible.
Yeah. I mean, everything
Taco
is
Bell,
so
like, Taco Bell is like the best fast food.
Yeah. Well, is Chipotle fast food? Because I think Chipotle's pretty good.
I don't think it's fast food if there's no drive-thru.
Fair enough.
That's my definition of it.
But Taco Bell, the combination of the nearly infinite customizability, the vegan friendliness, all of that. Yeah. Their food is just really tasty. People say it makes you poop a lot. I legit think that that's just because it's the first time a lot of people who eat fast food have encountered fiber in years.
I think that's right, because I've never had stomach issues from Taco Bell.
I haven't either. Nope.
One time I ordered so much cheese heavy stuff and my system's not really used to dairy anymore and I had some issues, but that was on me.
Yeah,
cheese will do that for sure. That happens to me too, and I eat cheese fairly regularly. Like if I just jump into Dion's pizza, like I know there's gonna be trouble.
Well,
but it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no choice. Dion's pound it down.
God, I miss Dion so much, dude.
Yeah.
I'll mail you some, bro.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Or you could ask the djinn.
Oh, djinn, give me a slice. Actually, give me a whole pizza.
You already
don't ask the djinn for a slice, Ronald. That's so obvious what's going to happen.
All right. Djinn, give me a slice extra red.
I want kidneys on top of it. Is that a pizza topping? I want it. And he's like, wow, I didn't have to work at all today. Yeah.
That was a freebie.
Like, I feel like you're doing this on purpose.
I refuse to grant your wish.
It's too obvious.
You're trying to trick me.
You try to out-gin the gin by getting up in his head. Okay, before we should move on to recommendations and cautions, but I do have an absolutely insane Wesley Snipes fact.
Okay.
Okay, so as you all know, Wesley Snipes' career got sort of sidelined because he apparently, I think maybe as part of kind of his African whatever supremacist, like he got involved in the Hoteps a little, I believe, which are this sort of African-American supremacist organization that thinks of the original Egyptians. That part doesn't matter, and also I'm not 100% on it. But anyways, that led him to sovereign citizen stuff, and he decided that he didn't actually have to pay taxes. And then he ended up not paying taxes, and the government went after him, and he went to prison, and, you know, all that, right?
Yeah.
So during the trial, he was represented by a man named Robert Barnes, right?
Okay.
Now, Robert Barnes, you know, he's an attorney. There's no particular reason you should know him. But the sort of amazing thing about him is that he was once apparently a pretty competent attorney. You know, Wesley Snipes doesn't hire you for no reason. But he later went kind of realized that there was a lot more money in crackpot grifting. So he is now a regular contributor to InfoWars and apparently was Alex Jones's representative early on in the lawsuits and is therefore a major reason why he lost those lawsuits due to, you know, never ever turning over any of the evidence he was asked for and got the default judgments. And Alex Jones is currently or has said under in a deposition that he is now planning to sue this man for legal malpractice, although he still has him on the show regularly. So it's unclear if that is actually happening or not. So yeah, just a very strange connection to between Alex Jones, Robert Barnes, and Wesley Snipes.
How does this guy have his fingers in so many pies?
Yeah.
The two lawsuits that I know him from, he fucked up majorly.
Yeah. Well, I think that the Wesley Snipes one at least was unwinnable because you know, you don't pay that many taxes.
He could have lost in a much less terrible way.
It is very, I think it's pretty hard to go to prison for tax fraud if you pay the money back.
That's what I was thinking. Like, how did he go to prison? And he went to prison for a while.
Yeah, it was like 5 years, I think.
Jesus.
Which seems like a lot for tax evasion. It's not even really fraud. He just didn't pay it.
Well, no, he also, well, it's debatable whether it's fraud or not because he did send them like bullshit legal documents that were like bills of attainder or something, like one of those weird sovereign citizen things that they claim are money but aren't money.
Yeah.
But still.
I refuse to acknowledge the government, so therefore I don't have to pay taxes.
Or like here, it's essentially he was printing, he sent them what were essentially Wesley Snipes bucks.
God, Wesley Snipes. What are you doing, bud?
These are backed by the full faith and credit of me, a person upon the land. That kind of shit.
Wow.
That didn't work?
Nope. He did not find the magic words.
That's a really good idea. If you could just make money.
I don't know why I didn't think of that.
Fuck, dude.
Yeah. So, I'm not saying that the magic words that let you short circuit the legal system and become immune to all laws don't exist, but he did not find them. So keep looking, folks.
Quest continues.
Yeah, yes. They're out there.
I'm not going to hire that lawyer. Is the punchline of this story?
He seems like a real asshole.
Robert Barnes is your legal representation, folks. It's a PSA.
Yeah. Anyways, so let's get to some recommendations and cautions. What do you fellas think?
All right, sounds good.
Okay, Rahul, would you like to go first?
Yeah, you know this is a rare instance when Rahul has a recommendation. I don't have any cautions. I'd like to recommend, this is weird, but, you know, I like weird shit. It's on Netflix, Sturgill Simpson Presents Sound and Fury. It's like this 40-minute anime music video. It's really interesting. I thought it was pretty well done. I know him as a country singer. I never listened to any of his shit, so I was like, you know, I was skeptical going in, but it doesn't really sound like country to me. It's irrelevant. It's really interesting. I'd watch it. At least the first half. So
the second half, you're not sold on. You should maybe just watch the first 20 minutes, not the full 40.
Up to you. I'm just saying, like, give it a good 5 minutes and see.
You keep talking yourself down. First you're like, watch the whole thing. Then you're give like, 20 minutes. Now you're like, five.
Yeah. If you're not caught in 30 seconds, just give up.
You know, I mean, what?
Honestly,
don't watch
this. That's
how
it is sometimes, right? Like, I'll just pop things up on Netflix and I'll be like bored and like leave it, you know, and I'd never give it a chance. And I know that's unfair, but it's the world we live in, you know?
Yeah, life's unfair.
If a Netflix video isn't as catching as a YouTube short or a TikTok video, what's even the point?
If a Netflix video isn't as engrossing as a porno, there's no point in watching it. And I don't give a porno more than 10 seconds.
I mean, how could you?
Well, I mean, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, now that
you
lose
interest.
You know, now that I know that my mom listens to these, I'm a lot more in my head about should I be saying jokes like that? Hippie heard of the show.
No, from my experience, your mom likes watching it.
God damn it. Mom, I'm going to cut that.
No, don't cut it.
Anyways, I'm going to go next. Right. So I've got a recommendation and a caution. First, the recommendation is Pearl. It is a movie that came out this year, 2022, directed by T. West. It's actually a prequel to a film that Brandon had recommended, X, and tells the story of the sort of villain of X's backstory. I actually didn't like X that much, but I went and saw this anyways because movies are free to me because I got that Regal, like, Unlimited, which you should get, incidentally. It's quite a good deal. But anyways, this is very strange because it tells the story of a young woman in the 1920s who's stuck in a pretty hellish home situation on a farm where her mother is a very strict German immigrant and her father has had a stroke and is paralyzed, and she's having a very bad time, so she keeps escaping to the movies. She tries to escape her like simple life on the farm, and things get very disastrous, and you know, there's murders and it's a horror movie and stuff. The thing that was very strange to me is that this is shot almost exactly like one of those 40s Technicolor like big budget melodramas. They made them up into the 50s too. And it has like the same tone, the same film stock, all of that. And then it will occasionally dip into just moments of extreme gore, which means that it is one of the strangest movies that I have ever seen. And you should check it out for that, if nothing else. It is just, it's very unusual to see a kind of movie that I have never seen before. So, you know, it's in theaters right now, and it will be on VOD by the time this comes out.
Oh,
I'm not even sure I'd stand up for it being like a great movie or a good movie exactly. It's just so
weird.
Again, it surprised me, and I'm not often surprised.
What's the name of it again?
Pearl.
Pearl.
X is
No. You're talking about the vampire from Blade.
The Eurotrash woman?
No, Pearl is the big bad guy.
Wait, really?
He had a name? Where did his name come up?
Why was his name Pearl and not like Fatso or something horrible? It was the 90s.
I mean, he's kind of like a big round white ball.
You know what it probably is, actually? Is that he looks kind of like the bottom half of a clam because he's got that weird like fleshy mat and then a round thing sticking up out of it.
You're right.
Yeah. Horrifying.
I don't like it.
Yeah. And anyways, yeah, I don't like it either, Ronald or Raul. I wish I hadn't put that together in my head, but I did. So anyways, my caution is a movie called Jeepers Creepers Reborn, which I saw again because movies are free and it's October right now, so I want to watch horror movies. This is apparently like a soft reboot or something, or legacy sequel or whatever the fuck, of Jeepers Creepers, a movie I have not seen. It is just, it starts where it looks like it's kind of like a pretty normal movie, where it's like, you know, a couple being stalked down a road by a sinister, like, pickup truck, and then they get eaten by a monster, and that's pretty normal. But then when it jumps forward into the present day, the combination of the dialogue, the strangeness of the concept where it's like this boy and girl going off to like a horror festival, and the dialogue doesn't connect, what's going on doesn't really add up, the outside, the weird thing is the design of the monster is actually pretty good, but for some reason all of the exterior shots after about 20 minutes into the movie are rendered as like laughably bad CGI to the point where it looked like, you know, FMV games, right? Where they like full motion video, where they'd have like actors and then like go in and make the backgrounds using pre-rendered like mid-90s CGI. It literally looks like that.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's astonishing how bad it is. And then the like creeper stalking them, the like characters through this like old house isn't very scary because, you know, it just doesn't connect. And also, for some reason, the creeper's main power is just whistling at you, and that like makes you stand still for a while. It just all added up to more puzzling and like annoying, and it isn't a movie somehow in this ineffable way that's very hard to explain. So don't watch it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there a good entry in the Jeepers Creepers series?
Not having seen the films, I can't speak to that too much. I think the first one is probably the best, just based on sort of what I've seen on the internet. Although that is complicated because the first one was directed by a pedophile, like a straight up convicted pedophile, who apparently used shooting it as a way of getting close to some of his victims. So it's pretty fucking hard to recommend.
I actually saw that movie and I did not really like it. I thought it was pretty bad.
Well, you probably just sense the residual pedo energy. So
maybe powerful. That was it. You know?
You guys think I should cut the pedophile talk? It's not good for a comedy podcast, even if it is true. But on the other hand,
I think people should know.
Yeah. Also, if you talk about Jeepers Creepers and don't mention it, people get mad because it's like minimizing the whole whatever. Anyways, okay. And now, finally, Ronald, you have the floor.
Okay. Recommendation. I saw this movie a couple of days ago in theaters, Barbarian, directed by Zach Cregger. It's just the start of October for us. I know by the time this comes out, it'll be a little bit later. But so I've been also trying to watch some horror movies. This one was really good. It's a relatively new movie. I quite enjoyed it. I don't want to spoil too much about it, but it's basically the premise is that like this woman rents an Airbnb and it's in a really bad neighborhood. And when she gets there, somebody's already there. And so she doesn't know if like, you know, and the guy claims it was an honest mistake. And, you know, he also rented it through a different app or something. And so they don't know really what to do. And she can't get another place for movie reasons. And so that's how the whole environment starts off. It's just you're kind of off tilt from the beginning. Nothing feels right. Nothing seems right. And the movie continues from there. It was quite good. I liked it a lot. It's even kind of funny at parts, but in kind of a horrifying way. So definitely recommend Barbarian. If you're into horror, please check that one out.
I would like to second that movie. It is also, it's not like I've never seen a movie like that before, but the way it keeps you guessing is really something.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And a caution, I have another horror movie. It's called Countdown. I didn't even watch all of this one on Netflix. Basically, the premise of this movie, very stupid premise. You download an app, it tells you how long it'll be before you die. And for some people, it's very soon. And if you change it by, I guess, knowing the information.
Hacking it.
Yeah, well, not even by hacking it. Just by, like, you know that you're going to die, so you're extra safe. It sends a demon after you or something. I didn't really get to that part, but it was fucking stupid. It wasn't scary. I didn't enjoy it.
You know what, Ronald?
What?
That was actually one of my favorite movies of the year. It came out.
Well, to be fair, I only watched, 20 minutes of it.
You're not wrong. It is so fucking stupid, but it is so stupid in this way that I found. So it gets to a point where they are hacking the app, right? For some reason, not really a thing you can do with an app exactly anyways, but they're like hacking on the computer, and I guess sideloading it back on, except the app's code is written in demon.
Wow, that's actually kind of beautiful.
Is that a Google language that I haven't heard of? Or?
Just get dumber and dumber and dumber. At Bianca and I, when we saw it in theaters, we were laughing our heads off and we had such a great time. But yeah, it's a bad movie. It's terrible. It's so fucking stupid.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't even get to the like good, bad parts. I watched basically the initial story, which is like, you know, you've seen a horror movie before. It starts off with somebody getting killed that's unrelated to the main character. Or maybe tangentially related to the main character. And so, like, the first kill, it was just really stupid and made no sense. And it was like, this isn't really a good hook for me. So I stopped watching it. I'd caution against that. But maybe it gets funny, so maybe it's worth checking out.
It is. Ronald is right that it's bad. Don't get it twisted.
Okay.
I just wanted to stand up for it being so bad it turns funny.
That does sound really hilarious. I didn't even get to that part.
Fair enough. I'm sorry I contradicted you.
No. Feel free. You know, I contradict you all the time.
Yeah. Anyways. Okay. And Rahul, do you have a plug?
Sure do. All right. So,
oh God.
All right. I want to start this one off with.
Roll. Is this about poop?
No.
Okay.
Well, it should be.
It's gotta be.
I want to start with this one off with. I get that you should not be judgmental about other cultures' customs, but I still find this so disgusting. I mean, I think Ronald would be fine with it. It's like one of those things. There's this place in Africa. Maybe there are a lot of places in Africa, but there's one specific place where
Lot of places in Africa. Yes, that is gigantic.
That checks out.
Where the mosquitoes are so thick in the air that you can just wave your hand and just like have a whole mat of them. So what they do is they'll like spray a frying pan and wave it in the air, catch a bunch of mosquitoes, keep catching mosquitoes, smush them into a ball and fry it.
That doesn't sound that bad.
How's the taste? I mean, did they let the mosquitoes drink their blood first, or?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
You can
really control that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I just find the idea of eating mosquitoes so viscerally disgusting to me.
Here's my thing about eating mosquitoes.
Yeah.
They're eating us, so they deserve it.
Yeah.
It's nothing to disturb it. I mean, just, I'm like that with every bug. You know, just like eating any bug just like disgusts me. It's not fair, but I don't know.
No, I mean, I get that. I get that, but that doesn't really go.
Just like thinking about like a patty of like all their little legs. Oh, and their wings. Fuck, man.
Just protein, baby.
Yeah.
It's just protein, baby. That's what Ronald says when you feed him just about anything that has any protein. You'd be amazed what you can get away with.
I was like, I mean, I get it. It's free calories in the air, right? But oh my God.
Dude, it's probably fine when you're hungry.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
You get to a point where you're like,
Spoiled, right? Like, I haven't.
Yeah.
I would try it.
I'd be kind of curious how it tastes. I wouldn't eat it because I'm a vegan, so I'm excused from this, but still.
Oh, God.
I've had some bugs. I've had crickets, and I think that crickets kind of taste like they smell, which is awful. But I've also had ants, and they weren't that bad.
You know, it's weird to me that Ronald has been sniffing crickets. That's weirder to me than him eating crickets, frankly.
Oh, yeah, it's because I used to have a lizard, and I would feed it crickets. And, dude, getting the crickets from the store, you can smell them. They smell so terrible.
Whoa. You know, it's crazy how smells as a child, like, stick with you. Because, like, I had this car, this ancient old Honda, that would always, like, hoses would explode. And before they exploded, you could smell the antifreeze. And now I'm like super sensitive to antifreeze. I'll walk past a car and be like, yep, that one.
That one's going to blow. Leaking.
Well, it's not going to blow, but antifreeze is somehow getting out of the system.
Interesting.
Super sensitive to antifreeze. Just was like that always the... smelling for antifreeze.
Was that the I car guess. You had in 07?
Like
the Accord?
It was my Accord.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was it.
You know, that car, say what you will, it had a kind of incredible handling.
Yeah, it was good for what it was, man. Like, that thing was a trooper.
Like, do you remember that time when we had that enormous snowstorm, right? And it was like winter of 07, and for some reason you decided that you were going to come down to my house. So you're driving down Tramway, which for people who don't live in Albuquerque, it's a four-lane road. There's a divider in the middle that it's just kind of a ditch with some plants in it. And we'd gotten like a foot of snow, which is not that much in the northeast or whatever, but it's a lot for Albuquerque. And Rahul is just like, no, I'm going to drive. And everyone else is doing like 10, but Rahul's like, you guys are pussies. The speed limit is 50. I'm driving 50. And he somehow ended up in this spin where he started going one way on the road and then swerved over the ditch and then all the way around so that he was facing the other way, like a 20-foot drift somehow.
Were you in my car when that happened?
I was not, thank God. I would have probably had a heart attack.
I was like, man, like that was one of many situations where I almost killed myself in a car. Like,
and I remember he was driving. He picked me up eventually. We also had to push his car up the hill, and I made him drive slow. And then he pointed at the tire track. I was like, "What the fuck happened over there?" And he's like, "Oh, that was me." I'm like, "What happened?" He's like, "I was driving the speed limit." I don't know.
I was a stupid kid, man.
Dude, it's great. It's crazy how terrible of a driver you were back then, and like how good of a driver you are now.
I mean, in a certain way, that is incredible driving to survive that.
Yeah, Ronald.
Yeah,
sure. Why not?
Yeah. Anyways, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, drive carefully and don't worship Satan. It's bad for you.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Life's gonna gather it, finger in the bottle.